and we appreciate you all being with us this morning. When we get to press questions, we'd like you to identify yourselves for the audience at home and the audience online by giving us your name and affiliation the first time you pose a question. We have a couple of my colleagues with me today. To my left is Senator Hollis French of Anchorage, and to my right is Senator Berta Gardner, and I still love calling you Senator Berta Gardner rather than former Representative Berta Gardner.
Not out hearing it.
Yes. We need more women in the Senate, and we appreciate you joining us today. We're going to begin with Senator Gardner with some comments about public education, some things that have been going on here in the state and in the Capitol building, and then we'll turn to Senator Hollis French after that. Okay. So good morning, Senator Gardner.
Good morning, and thank you, Senator Ellis. We remain adamant that it's critically important for the health of this state that we invest in education to the extent of, at the bare minimum, inflation-proofing in statute the base student allocation. We had testimony this week from the Association of School Boards, and they brought students in and teachers to talk about what the impacts are of the 4 years of flat funding in education. And it works very much against the goals of this state, which is to improve our graduation rate, to have more students be able to qualify for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And what we're doing is taking steps backwards. It's hurting our students. And is really unacceptable. It is not an investment in our future. At the same time, we also believe that forward funding of education is very important for the planning. Businesses do it. We expect it of corporations. We expect it of government. And we certainly should allow school districts the same opportunity to plan ahead, to retain their best teachers who, with job insecurity around the state, are likely to leave. There are good things going on in our schools. Senator Ellis is leading the effort to finish what we started in get the engineering buildings for the UAA and UAF campuses funded and completed. We heard testimony just this morning about the growing need for not only to have more engineers, but the demand for students. And we know that when we train our own, whether we're talking about nurses or engineers or anybody else, they're more likely to stay here than people who come from outside. And engineering companies were telling us about hiring people from outside, investing in them, and finding that in 2 years they leave to go back to their families. So it's an obvious common sense things to do. And we'll continue those efforts.
Senator Gardner, you've heard people on the other side of the aisle, some legislative leaders in the majority, crow about record funding for education and what's the problem, and they've put so much money into education and they're big supporters of education, and we take them at their word that they're big supporters of education. But a layperson might think, oh, well, the legislature has kept up with inflation and funded things. We've had the school board folks in town this past week talking about layoffs and cuts to the classroom.
That's right.
How do you reconcile, or can you really give the inside story of how some legislative leaders can say there's record funding for education, so what's the problem? And then school districts being confronted with massive layoffs and kids in the classroom suffering from a lack of funding.
That's exactly right. Well, what we've done in recent years, what the legislature's done, is give certain block grants to go for retirement systems or to go for heating and things like that. They don't go into the classroom. The classroom services have been squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. My own district, Anchorage School District, announced last week that they were having cuts of about 215. And they've so far avoided this year very many classroom teacher cuts, but the anticipation is that there will be classroom teacher cuts eventually, and class sizes are expecting to increase to about 38 students per classroom. That's a direct result of our failure to inflation-proof the base student allocation. In the meantime, the cuts will impact graduation rates. We're laying off the aides and assistants to graduation coaches, for example. We're laying off special ed aides. And when that happens, every classroom that is potentially impacted by the lack of services to some of the neediest kids, to say nothing of the fact that those kids are less likely to graduate when they don't have the support systems that they need. So everything translates down to the classroom. That's what we're focused on, and we're focused on improving the outcomes at the end, do the best we can from kids, for kids.
So pretty tough to get to 90% graduation rate, a stated goal if the funding is flat?
That's right. It's moving backwards. We won't reach the graduation goals, and we won't have kids qualifying to move on to increase our college attendance, career vocational, that sort of thing.
Okay. Thank you for your work on education. Are there questions from folks here from the press on the subject of public education?
Becky Boyd, the Associated Press. Senator Gardner, do you then support, I guess, on the House side, House Democrats had proposed inflation proofing and requiring that districts submit goals and priorities? I mean, at what point do you then also hold the districts accountable or say, you know, if we provide extra money or, you know, keep pace, tell us how you're using it. Are we on the same team here? Are we meeting common goals? And I guess I wonder, do you support that approach or some other approach where there'd be some greater accountability for this?
I think districts are held accountable every day. Their budgets are open, their test results, their AY adequate yearly progress results, they're held accountable by families who can choose to go to other places if they want to, other schools even within the district, alternatives. It's a very, very open process. They're held accountable to the school boards and the voters. I don't believe there's anything secret in any of that process, and people who want to find out how the money is being spent and what the results are know, and the families whose children go to schools know what the results are.
But it's a shared goal between Democrats in the House and Senate to inflation-proof the schools and keep up with fixed costs and not think that a one-time or covering retirement payments, which we're obligated to do, or one-time energy costs is adequate, or that anyone should claim great pride in record funding for education when that's really quite misleading. Okay, anything else? Any other questions in the room on education? Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mark Miller, Juneau Empire. Senator Gardner, one thing I noticed is that Democrats say that when we talk about oil tax reform, any decrease in taxes should be tied to an increase in Alaskan production. And when Republicans talk about education reform, they talk about needing any additional funding to the schools to be tied to increased performance. Can you comment on that at all?
Well, I would say that before we started flat funding, we did see consistent increases in student test scores and in graduation rates. When we start flat funding, we can anticipate that those will begin to slide. There are schools who don't have support personnel to lay off. I mean, small school districts, they have to go directly to their services to students every single time. And that's it. Thank you.
Senator French, on this point.
Yeah, just on that point, I think it's important to remember that we have a constitutional obligation to educate the children of the state. You cannot lose sight of that. You just cannot. We do not have a constitutional obligation to produce oil out of North Slope. That's a fantastic thing that we're doing. We all support it. I worked 13 years in the oil industry. The state has benefited greatly. But there's an enormous difference in the function of the legislature when it comes to education and when it comes to natural resource development.
Okay, let's turn to Mike Mason in Dillingham. Mike, did you have any questions about education?
Yeah, not really about education, but I did want to just ask if the legislative fly-in, the school district legislative fly-in that was held over the weekend and earlier this week, what impact that had on you all in regards to your decision-making about education?
Yeah.
Were they able to provide some guidance or some insight?
Well, they were here in force from around the state. I think they did have an impact. We all appreciate folks that take the time and money and resources to get here and share their insights. There were folks from urban and rural school districts, and so I would expect they had some productive meetings. I'm hoping that they can break through this idea that there's adequate funding for education currently. We're going into the fourth year of flat funding with just some one-time energy money and, of course, keeping up with our retirement obligations. And so it's really starting to have a drag effect, and we see a fall in performance because of the lack of resources in the classroom. 38 kids in a classroom, I'm not a teacher, but that's a huge burden, a huge challenge to have good education in place with that many kids crowded up in a classroom. So it had an impact on me. I attended the meeting where we listened to school district folks testify. I don't think the legislature or the people in charge of the legislature at this point have gotten the message that the funding is inadequate. The Governor Parnell said in his State of the State address that our schools remain hopeful. Well, everyone's hopeful for good things to happen. I think the school districts are hopeful that legislative leaders will see the light, that what they call record funding for education is inadequate and somewhat misleading. Okay, we're going to come back to the room here and turn to Senator Hollis French, our member on the Senate Resources Committee. There's the so-called land exchange bill that has significant import for permitting issues in the state of Alaska. Maybe not the most sexy or exciting subject, but very important to the state's future. And Senator Hollis French.
It does. We've had a couple hearings on the bill now, and because of the information that we uncovered in the last hearing, I have asked the Senate President to refer this bill to the Judiciary Committee. If you look at the bill, it has probably a dozen or more provisions that deal with challenges to permits, challenges to a decision made by the commissioner about a permit and so forth, and who may bring these challenges and under what standards. And because it's so much bound up in the legal questions and legalese, it occurred to me that this is the kind of work that should be done in the Judiciary Committee. Most of the questions I asked were about those provisions, and I could see I was sort of wearing on the patience of the committee because it was so much legally oriented. I just think it needs to go down there. The bill, the law, interestingly enough, was put on the books back in 1980. One of the ones I'm most concerned about water reservations. It was a bill introduced by Governor Jay Hammond to make sure that water reservations were available around the state, and the Resources Committee at the time did good work on it and added the ability for individuals to apply for water reservations. That's something that this bill is removing, that ability. It concerns me. I think it has to do with mining developments that may be coming in the state. At the time, the Resources Committee said, look, you've got to let public local knowledge and local concerns apply for these water reservations. And this bill removes that section of the bill. So it's a bill that's been on the books for 30 years. We're changing part of it. We're elevating the legal standards for challenging permits. It's a concern of mine, and it's something I'm asking the Senate President to let the Judiciary Committee take a look at.
And you have not received an answer yet about the additional.
I just spoke to him yesterday morning. You know, informally at his office, and made the request. I don't know what he'll do with it, but it's important to me that the bill get a serious legal vetting.
Okay. Any questions about Senate Bill 26, the land exchange bill and permitting issues? Bob?
Thank you. Bob Cox with the Legislative Digest and Laws for the Sea. Senator French, would you say the goal of the bill and the elements dealing with land exchange and water reservations overall limits the public's ability to have an influence on those issues?
I wouldn't say it eliminates it, but it certainly restricts it. It certainly limits it. Right. I mean, right now, a person, meaning an NGO, meaning a local tribe, meaning a local village, can apply for a water reservation to allow for fishing rights or for public access or for recreation. That ability will be removed if this bill becomes law as written. And I have a concern about that. That's just, it's something, as I say, that 30 years ago, the Resources Committee added specifically that provision so that the public could be a part of this process. And I think you just have to be cautious before you remove it.
And the land elements also tend to restrict public involvement or public ability to influence issue at hand.
Well, certainly when it comes to challenging permits, you know, you're going from a standard right now that says anyone who's aggrieved by a permitting decision or a permitting final action can bring a complaint and get resolution. That standard has been raised to someone who's substantially and adversely affected. And when I asked the Department of Law whether that was meant to raise the bar, they professed that they didn't know. Department of Natural Resources witness said that it was in fact designed to raise the bar to make it more difficult, which it strikes me that that's exactly what they're trying to do. But it just seems like it's something that the Judiciary Committee should take a look at.
Further questions on that subject? Another subject, Shauna?
Education, Shauna Crandall, Alaska Education Update. We just heard in the Senate Education Committee about getting more funding for the UAA and UAF engineering facilities. It was my understanding before this hearing that there was enough funding so that there didn't need to be another appropriation until next year, but it sounded like funding is going to run out before next session.
There was testimony by Chancellor Brian Rogers that if the rest of the money doesn't come in this session, in this capital budget, or as an appropriation for the bill, that it will complicate the construction schedule. And so we're pinning down those details to make sure we portray that accurately to the legislature. But I believe, as the sponsor of the bill, that it's important that we do the second and final phase of the funding to avoid delays, to avoid additional costs this year. In fact, we're quoting Senator Kevin Myers' comments that we should, instead of building a bunch of new capital projects in the state of Alaska, given our budget situation, that we should finish what we started. I think that applies in spades to the two engineering programs that are completely justified, high demand, big demand from the private sector and the resource development industries. So for all the meritorious reasons in the world, we should stay on schedule, and the money is needed this year. But we'll get more details about that from the administration. Go ahead.
And the other question is, pretty much everyone who testified, there were a lot of testimony from industry, and people in industry saying that education, to begin studying engineering in college, there had to be a lot of preparation by students in even as early as middle school. Is the flat BSA funding going to impact STEM programs, do you think, or?
Well, that'd be a good question for Mary Hakala, who's here in Juneau and headquartered at the Juneau Economic Development Corporation. We've made a huge investment in prep in K through 12 to get kids in junior high and high school ready to go to college and to go into STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. There's also been the addition, and there's a legislative or a budget request this year for further funding to expand the engineering academies. Many people get very excited that people are in their public schools not just cheering on the local sports teams, but cheering on the robotics team and the math and science teams at these schools. And so there is a potential bottleneck or a big glut of students that get excited about math and science and want to go on to the university here in Alaska at Anchorage and Fairbanks. And so the updated facilities and the modern labs are absolutely essential to that. Flat funding could very well affect that because some of the extra programs are the first things to go. Not just music and art, but some of the extra programs that are beyond the core curriculum that are nice to have, but not absolutely essential. So these are programs that get young people excited and engaged at an early age, increase their math skills so they can actually hack it when they get to UAA and don't need remediation at UAA or UAF. It's a very good thing. There really is no opposition to increased and enhanced engineering programs at the two campuses. It's a price tag thing. And some of the new legislators who ran on, we got to get government spending under control, they might have meant the U.S. Congress. And they bring kind of their budget cutting ideas to the state budget as well. And so there is a sticker shock for some of the new people to understand that facilities, building the state, a relatively young state, infrastructure is an expensive thing. So anyway, we're working through the issues, and flat funding of K through 12 education could have a negative effect, but we'll try to do the best we can. Senator Gardner.
And if I could just add something, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, their original vision was to start with high school kids, ninth grade, I believe, and start working with them to prepare them for engineering programs. And they decided they needed to start even earlier, and so they went to the middle school level and did that for a little while, and now they're reaching down into the sixth grades at elementary level to try to get kids before they've already decided that they're not going to get into math and science. So their experience has been that you just start as early as you possibly can. And I know there are some schools that have science and math game night, and they have packets with the materials provided and try to get families and kids to come in and play games that require math skills and science understanding, and that's pretty cool.
here in Juneau, some of the teachers were referring to it as STEAM instead of STEM because they had, they had incorporated music education. So the A STEAM is arts, science, technology, engineering, math, arts and math. Senator Begich went out and played violin or tried to attempted to play the violin with some of the students here in Juneau because of the connection between brain development with music skills and with math skills. So there are a lot of exciting things going on around the state. We have encouraged young people to enhance their skills, to do this extra work, to get into science and math. And then wouldn't it be a shame if we don't have the facilities to accommodate them at the post-secondary level, let alone the graduate level? So Alaskan resource development industries are demanding Alaskan-trained engineers. We'd be remiss not to put the resources there because it is a moneymaker through keeping people here at home, stopping the brain drain, attracting research grants. It's a moneymaker, and it's something that we've asked young people and families to commit to, and legislators need to do their part. So Shauna, thank you for the question. Anything else on that subject? Senator French wants to talk about revenue forecast here in just a minute, but go
I
right ahead.
I actually wanted to, Senator, let's just move on to oil tax reform, if that's okay, just real quickly.
Perfectly, go right ahead.
Yesterday, Adam Pinsker with KTUU. Senator Gardner, your reaction to some of the testimony yesterday from the folks who came to the TAPS committee, and I know some of them felt like the current proposal on the table doesn't go far enough in the way of incentives. What did you think of the testimony yesterday?
I thought it was really interesting, and I found it a little bit frustrating trying to get direct answers to my questions. And I would like to put on the table that I submitted questions in writing to the Department of Revenue following the Econ 1 presentations, and they've had those for over a week, and I don't have my answers yet. So I think that there's still a lot of information to get out. In terms of the credits, the credits were designed to is one of the incentives for oil companies that had high profits, that progressivity, their taxes they thought were high, will then go ahead, invest in Alaska, and participate in the state credit program, and bring down your tax rate on every dollar of profit. And I tried to sort of get on the record if anybody had actually done that, some of the companies there, and they wouldn't say yay or nay.
And what's the schedule for the rest of the work of the
I think the chair would like to move the bill out of committee tomorrow, but we will meet on Saturday if we don't get there. And
has there been markup on the bill? Is he entertaining amendments? What's the status?
There are indications that the intention is to have a letter to accompany the bill, and I think that they're signaling they're not going to accept amendments, but I intend to offer at least some of the ones that I think are the most important, and I'm not quite ready to say which ones those will be, but I will be offering amendments.
To introduce some amendments to the bill?
Absolutely. We will.
Okay. Does it go to judiciary or resources after
to
this?
To resources after this, okay. And then finance.
Then finance.
Okay. Becky and then Frank.
So if there's a letter, is the minority voice going to be heard on that letter? I mean, you mentioned that that's the indication, so.
In my view, the way we signal what we want is by the amendments that we offer. And I would hope that the concerns that I raise in my amendments would be addressed in an accompanying letter. That remains to be seen.
Frank, you know, identify yourself for the record, please.
Frank Amadori, Alaska Budget Report. On that subject, the last 2 years, both the oil tax and the gas line bill that are two of the biggies moving through again this year came to the Senate to meet their demise. With the new organization and new leadership in the Senate this year, how confident are you that any significant changes can be made, if you think they should be, to either of those bills, and in this case, the oil tax that we're talking about now?
Well, the Juneau Empire today has a good story about majority senators in the Senate. That's where the senators work, is in the Senate. Talking about how they've got to have some progressivity back. So you're already seeing a significant change to the bill being led by, I saw Senator Fairclough and Senator Stedman referred to in that story. So I think that's at least a major signal that the Senate's not going to accept the bill as it's written. Yeah, I think that's a good start.
We're looking for common ground with majority members based on public opinion, common sense, expert testimony, all the things that are in defiance of the governor's current version of his oil tax bill. So, you know, we're looking past parties, past organizations, past all of that to common sense, public opinion, a good business deal, what Alaskans want for their oil. You know, I hear it all the time. Give them a tax break if they'll drill here, and maybe we'll get some jobs and we'll get some revenue. Don't give our money away for them to drill off the coast of Africa without any benefit to us. That would be a chump move. It'd be a ripoff. It would be in defiance of the state constitution. Just listen to the good common sense of the people of Alaska, and you start to hear a trend from people that the governor's approach is not really sitting well with most Alaskans. With the oil industry employees who came and testified to their own personal interest or their company's interest, no big surprise there. That's what they do, and that's what's good for their families. It's no surprise when shareholders of Exxon or BP or ConocoPhillips speak up in support of their financial interest. Not a big surprise. But if you listen to the common sense of the Alaskan public, there's a definite feeling there that we should strike a better business deal than what is contained in the governor's bill. And majority members starting to talk about that, that's very encouraging, that common sense Alaskan feeling could trump oil industry pressure or partisanship or an organization that was conceived to lessen the voices or silence the voices of people asking tough questions that maybe the industry doesn't want to answer.
If I could Frank, follow up. A quick follow-up on that. Traditionally, though, in the Senate, it's more unusual, certainly, than in the House, for caucus members to vote outside of the caucus on big issues like that. Is it going to be different this time?
I guess I would challenge your assumption. I mean, oil taxes have always been a caucus splitter. Oil taxes were a caucus splitter in 2006 to a small degree, to a huge degree in 2007, and I think they've kind of been that way ever since. I don't think, you know, 2 years ago the Senate minority was united in their views about oil tax reform, and I certainly don't think the majority was either. And so I think, you know, they've always been, you know, sort of one of the most entertaining subject to deal with, because people don't sort of fit into a niche because of party affiliation or which organization they're part of. People feel very passionately about this, and you know, we've seen great examples of courage in past years of people leaving their party to vote their conscience on oil taxes when it really matters.
It's so important. It's so historic. People don't want to go down in history as the 11th vote for an epic ripoff or something that will affect the state for the next 20 years. It's $20 billion over the next 10 years. That's a big deal. And when the import of that starts to sink in, even for the new people who haven't wrestled with these issues, have never listened to Pedro Van Meer's presentation, even the new people can get a sense of being part of history. And people don't want to be on the wrong side of history or the wrong side of public opinion once it catches up with us. Alaskans want to continue to enjoy the benefits of the oil industry and not pay taxes or lose their dividends. And eventually somebody has to pay for something. And if we don't get our fair share from oil resources, then the choices become very difficult and very painful very quickly. And, you know, that's a day of reckoning. How far legislators can put off the day of reckoning? You know, we saved $18 billion. It'll take a while to run through that. But yeah, people's conscience starts to catch up with them on oil taxes. And it has, it will be very, very interesting to watch if people put party first, the oil industry first, their caucus first, or if they put their conscience and the future fiscal and economic well-being of the state of Alaska first. This will be a whole chapter in your memoirs there, Frank Amadori, I guarantee. Pat Forgy and then Bob.
Pat Forgy, Alaska Dispatch. A number of your colleagues work directly for industries that are affected by what you do. Do you see that as a conflict of interest, either legally or morally? And if those people want to be excused from voting, would you object to that? Should people object to that?
Us.
I'll answer that. You know, it's, I think it's, it doesn't bother me personally. I'll just speak for myself. You know, I worked 13 years in the oil industry. I came to the legislature with a very strong perspective that actually changed over time as I sat in these seats and contemplated the issues that are in front of us. We've got two colleagues who work in the oil industry. You know, that's between them, their conscience, and their constituents, and the rest of the public, in my view. There's no direct conflict of interest because there's nothing on the books that says there's a conflict of interest. The fact is that we have a citizen legislature, and it produces uncomfortable moments from time to time. That's part of the business. Until you wall people off from the community that they live in, which I don't think is possible, you're going to have instances exactly like the ones we have here. I don't think it's even surprising that you have industry employees here. They're a major employer. They have a huge hand in what happens in the state. The difficulty is separating the interests of the industry with the interests of the state. That's where the real difficulty comes, and I just think that's part of the business.
And Senator Gardner? I would just like to add that because a person works for the oil industry does not mean they're corrupt or dishonest in any way. So you can't assume that. They can still make very good decisions for the right reasons, whether I agree with them or not in the end.
And if they get up and say, I've got a conflict of interest, I'd like to be excused from voting, would you object to that and require them to vote?
That's a tougher one. And the problem is that there are issues that are very controversial, and sometimes people don't want to be on the record voting at all. And if you allow people to be exempt from voting, there's going to be a lot of people who aren't voting on controversial issues at all, and that doesn't serve us well either.
Thank you, Pat. Bob?
Senator, I was wondering when we might expect the Senate Democrats' oil tax reform bill.
Coming soon. But let me turn to a subject that's extremely important related to that, and that is, how are we going to measure the success of oil tax reform? And it's a subject we actually touched on briefly last week, and I was in the process of working on it, and it really is going to come down to measuring oil production, right? The governor's made that his sort of standard. I think that's what our standard is going to be. How are we going to measure the success of oil tax reform? And that's what makes the semi-annual production forecasts so crucial. We saw some eyebrows raised last fall when the production forecast came in significantly lower than the ones we've seen in years past. The fall revenue forecast, showed production dropping more than we'd seen in the past. For example, in 2014, the spring forecast thought we'd be making about 567,000 barrels of oil a day. The fall forecast said, no, it's going to be 538. That's 30,000 barrels difference. That's $3 million every day in revenue to the state at $100 a barrel. That's a big deal. Where did that $3 million a day go? And based on some good questions asked by a publication called the Budget, the Alaska Budget Report, great publication. I have filed a public records request of the Department of Revenue to tell us how they built their models, because I believe that it's at least possible that if you, in years going forward, if you suddenly see a bump up in the production forecast, someone could say, well, look, the reason the forecast is now going up is because we changed oil taxes. What a fantastic thing. We've gone from low numbers to high numbers in the production forecast. If you don't know how they built this most recent forecast, you could be susceptible to being fooled about the result of oil tax reform. That's what I'm concerned about. So we've got to get to bedrock on that. That's why I sent a letter a week ago to the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, Brian Butcher, asking him for the basics of the model that he built to create the fall production forecast. It's extremely important that we get to bedrock on this question before we do oil tax reform, or else we'll be subjected to revisionist history. Everyone's going to want to look and say, look what happened because we changed oil taxes. It was my concern for years as we saw more and more development on the slope that it wasn't getting sufficiently trumpeted by the governor because it didn't fit with his narrative of decline and decay on the North Slope. And I sort of said facetiously, you know, had we revised oil taxes last year and we got new people like Repsol, Armstrong, Great Bear coming along, the governor would be on the North Slope standing next to them, you know, cutting the ribbon and having a parade. Okay, all those huge developments have taken place without much fanfare, at least from the third floor in my view. And so it's important, I think, for the state to at least have a clear picture of what's happening on the North Slope before we change oil taxes so that no one's fooled by the effect of that change.
Could you be more specific on coming soon, Senator, on your bill, given the given the pace of SB 21? And if it goes through resources, what's going to be the point of introducing an alternate version?
Soon, Bob really means soon. I mean soon. When I say soon, I don't mean later, I mean soon. Trust me. Soon. Later. Sooner than later, right.
It's the kind of bill you want to have fully vetted and...
Sorry, I can't be more specific. We're really working hard on it, and you know, it's getting a lot of people and the drafters all in alignment, and so it's going to happen really soon.
You'll be the first to know.
Well, I can't promise that, but Johnny promised that.
That was fake. I didn't mean that at all. Mr. Miller.
Just wondering, I've been hearing that actually that exact same, we want to get it right out of the House Democrats. Is this a collaborative effort between your two caucuses, and is the bill going to be rolled out a Senate version and a House version at the same time?
That is the plan, yes. We have been talking, we've been working. There are finer details and points that the drafters, you know, it's complicated to get it right and to protect the state's interest, and so we want to make sure that the bills are in alignment, that it is the Democratic and progressive common sense Alaska alternative to the governor's oil wealth giveaway bill. We recognize that there are changes, that adjustments that need to be made to ACEs. We're willing to do that. We were trying to do that last year. But it wasn't enough for the oil industry. They didn't want $4 to $8 billion on top of the billions that we give now in tax benefits. They wanted $20 billion over the next 10 years. And so we want to make sure that our bills are, they will be in alignment. It's the Democratic alternative, and it will be soon. Becky, on that point or other?
Yeah, will there be, there are two Democrats in the majority caucus. Are you getting any supporters, any sign-on from them or anybody else, or is this going to be a true minority bill?
It's the Democrats in the House and Senate. There are other folks that would be welcome to join on as co-sponsors. We'd welcome Republicans that are concerned about progressivity. We're collaborative, and we're willing to work with anybody. We've proved that over the last 6 years. We are the group that will work with anybody to accomplish the goals for the state of Alaska. And so those folks would be free to join in. We're not working directly with them. We don't want to get them in trouble or raise concerns with their majority colleagues. We're not troublemakers. We're problem solvers, and everyone will be free and welcome to join in at the appropriate time. Okay, we need to start wrapping things up. Let me turn to Mike Mason in Dillingham. Mike, did you have any questions before we start to close out?
Yes, please. There has been the recent announcement that the legislative watershed assessment that they're going to put that back out for another draft version. And almost every stakeholder that I've talked to on both sides believes that the coal mine issue or this issue of large-scale mineral development in the Bristol Bay region needs to be resolved by the Alaska legislature. I'm curious if Senator French, if there are any pieces of legislation forthcoming, if there's any movement out there to clarify the situation, one side or the other, about large-scale mineral development in an area like this.
Well, I think I understood your question. You were kind of cutting in and out at the beginning, but obviously there's the Citizens Initiative in the works that would put the Alaska State Legislature as the last sort of gatekeeper on permitting the Pebble Mine. Is that what you're asking about?
I'm asking if there are any efforts out there in the legislature to do that or other ways to clarify the situation in regard to large-scale mineral development. Because most every stakeholder that I talk to, pro and con, believes that this needs to be decided by the Alaska legislature. It's not the state's plan. So far, the legislature, every time it's come up, has punted.
I'm just asking if we're going to punt again this time.
Well, I guess I disagree with you that every single stakeholder thinks that, because I'm fairly certain that the pro-mining folks would prefer that we stay out of it. That was the reaction I got to filing my bill last year that would do what the initiative does. So I guess, you know, it's not clear to me that everybody's looking to the legislature to resolve the issues of large-scale mining in Alaska. I think the Citizens Initiative will be an interesting test of that proposition, to see whether the voters, and first of all, whether it gets on the ballot, second of all, whether the voters, you know, assent to giving us that enormous responsibility. So I guess the jury's out, and to answer the other sort of affiliated part of your question, I don't think there's any other bill filed that touches on the issue that you raised.
Mike, we really appreciate you being with us. And to my colleagues, thank you for helping out today, and all of you for being here. We'll be here next week. We appreciate your time and attention. We are adjourned. Thank you.